Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Let's fill the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of the Personal Welsh Coach on this Welsh Coach. On this Saturday, January 25th. You can give us a call in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
Ed Yardini, the noted economist, you know, he's into ecosystems, obviously, nominal ecosystems, actually economist, had an interesting comment about the market fall. The widespread headlines, which, by the way, tend to echo each other, said it was because China was talking about growing. That the last in the fourth quarter, they only grew at 6-point-something percent. I say 6-point-something because private economists are saying that the Chinese sort of cooked the books on that from time to time. But he said that, in his opinion, a lot of traders are focusing on deflation as a threat, which I think is interesting that he finally came around to our position that we've been talking about for a year. You know,
more than a year.
He said that it's
2.5 years now.
Up till recently, he said it's been a theoretical threat, and he says that he no longer sees it as theoretical. He sees it as real. A lot of people are very, very, very much afraid of inflation, possibly because of people talking heads on television telling you to be afraid of inflation and buy gold and things like that. The reality continues to be that deflation is the serious threat. Japan was headed towards bankruptcy as a nation on deflationary activity within Japan. And very frankly, one of the reasons that China is a little bit concerned at this point, the economists who study that economy are concerned, is because the Japanese have finally gotten over their fear of inflation, apparently, and are pumping money into their economy. And as a result, the yen has been falling. And they've actually got a tiny, tiny, tiny little bit of inflation slipping into the Japanese economy for the first time, which they've worked at very, very hard. They're trying to get that. And if you think that, well, you know, deflation is good and inflation is terrible, and so we should have deflation rather than inflation, I want you to note something here. The Japanese have a public outstanding debt. Now, a public outstanding debt means a debt held by the public that is real Japanese equivalent of treasury securities outstanding that either a member of the Japanese public owns or foreigners own, and the vast majority is held by foreigners, equivalent to 250% of their gross domestic product.
That's a lot.
We are around 73%, 73, depending on who you listen to, 73 to 80% is our debt level. And
even if you throw in the imaginary debt of what the government owes to itself, which they can forgive at any point,
that kicks us up to about 100%.
Right. We're just over 100%. So when you think of Japan, most people don't think of an unhealthy economy. And they are far, far further along than we are in their debt to GDP ratio.
And you know, I was looking around the world, and I think I mentioned this in the letter I just wrote, and I think it'll be published this week, that when you compare our debt with that of the other developed nations in the world, and by the way, you have to use the same measurement in order to understand it. And just like when we talk about our manufacturing versus Chinese manufacturing, you have to be sure you're measuring the same things on both ends. But our debt is among the developed nations of the world, among or the lowest, relating when we compare it to our gross domestic product. As a matter of fact, the debt of China, which is one of those things, you know, it's funny, I wrote that last week, and then apparently the whole world woke up to it before I even published the letter. China's total debt compared to the gross domestic product is equivalent to ours. And when I say total debt, that includes corporate debt. And there's even an article in here. Nobody knows exactly how much money is owed in China. And the reason is the largest lenders in China are what they call the shadow banking system.
Yeah.
And the Chinese government had to step in last week. That's another this week.
Yeah, this week.
That's another issue that's causing people to be nervous is the Chinese government had to step in and rescue a shadow lending organization, because had it gone down, a whole series of companies would have suddenly gone bankrupt, right, and it would have damaged the economy.
China is at its point right now in the banking world where we were in the late 1800s. They have banks out there that are not regulated by their government. And the reason why they're not regulated by their government is because the regulations on banks in China are over the top. They're government-only type things.
Yeah, only the government can have a bank. So
right.
an underground bank system springs up.
The fact that the not just the shadow banking system had to be bailed out, a specific shadow bank was bailed out by the Chinese government.
Yeah, China Credit Trust Company. To be
at exact. The same time, China infused the government banks, the ones that we would think of here as normal commercial banks, but they're in China, they are government, with a large chunk of money. So the banks were all shorn up. The reason is because they're seeing instability in the banking structure there. They went through the recession by pumping money into the economy, lots and lots and lots of money, and that's caused some inflation. It's caused their economy to slow down at this point because they're not pumping the money in. But it also caused a lot of easy money to be there. China has the ability also to say that no mortgages can be written on Thursdays. I realize that sounds just kind of arbitrary, me saying no mortgages on Thursdays.
I like
but,
that.
But that's actually one of the things that they did.
Do you realize by broadcasting that somebody from the government might hear you?
Right.
Right.
They say no mortgages are issued on Thursdays. And they also said things like, if you already own a house in a province, you can't own a second house in that province based on whether or not the real estate prices have been going up too fast there. So they have a lot of tools that we don't have, but at the same time, people are getting around that by saying, all right, well, we're going to have a shadow bank. Basically, somebody's uncle has a lot of money, and they're going to loan the money to you to buy the house. Well, if you don't pay that money back, somebody's uncle is going to show up and break your kneecaps.
The Chinese are facing a crisis, and that's another thing that some people are beginning to get a little worried about. About 40% of the $3 trillion in local government debt will come due in 2014.
Yeah.
Much of that money hasn't gone to put in sewers and roads, which is what our debt typically goes to. But what they've done locally across China is real estate speculation.
Yeah.
And the problem is that the Chinese government encouraged that during the recession to keep people at work. Well, now the loans are coming due, and in 2014, a great number of these loans will come due. One of them came due a little earlier, already come due this year, and the government had to step in with the equivalent of $500, to them, I don't guess it's a lot of money, but $500 million to keep a coal company from shutting down. And since Chinese have to import coal yeah. is a critical element in China, it becomes a little complex. What's happened is we think of the Chinese as holding so much surplus and having so many dollars and having so much money that they couldn't possibly have this situation. In fact, they do have a situation. Their debt is in a different place than our debt. Our debt is handled by the federal government. It is managed by the Fed. By the way, that debt I told you about earlier that I mentioned I looked it up again. It is something like between 80 and 84% of our gross domestic product
right.
is our debt outstanding. But here's the key, and you've mentioned this before. 31% of our outstanding debt held by the public is held by the Federal Reserve.
Correct. And that can be forgiven.
It can be forgiven, and this is another interesting thing. Jake has mentioned this many times, but the Federal Reserve is currently supplying the United States Treasury with between 80 and 200 billion dollars a year in income
from purchases that it's made of these, you know,
when they talk about and interest charge.
People talk about printing money. What they were doing this with QE 1, 2, and 3 is they're purchasing troubled debts. Well, a lot of those debts have turned out to be profitable.
Untroubled.
That they were just troubled in the pricing market because nobody knew whether or not they were troubled. So by definition, if you don't know if they're troubled, they become troubled.
So the Fed became the rational long-term investor.
Yeah, so the Fed did what Warren Buffett has done on many occasions and came in and bought at a very low price a bunch of stuff that was worth a lot more, but people weren't willing to see it being worth a lot more at that point.
But
they've made a lot of profit, and the profit of the Federal Reserve in its bond-buying business, its Federal Open Market Committee business, goes to the United States government.
And the difference between Warren Buffett and the Federal Reserve is the Federal Reserve has actually made trillions of dollars worth of purchases,
right,
where Warren Buffett is limited to billions.
Yes. And just so those of you that are out there should know this, the Federal Reserve doesn't use the government's money to do this. The Federal Reserve is not the government. It is a banking institution. It is a lot of banking institutions. It's a conglomeration of banking institutions. And they use reserves that they've been pulling out of the currency to prevent inflation to make these purchases. They have a lot of money on the books. And it's appropriate for them to pump that money back into the economy when we have deflation if they're pulling the money out of the economy when we have inflation. To fight inflation, it charges banks more interest on its interbank lending rate. It says, okay, you've got to pay me more. This raises interest rates, which causes more loans to be harder to get, which is why inflation goes down when we raise interest rates. Well, when the opposite is happening, when we have deflation, there's not enough money in the economy. If the Federal Reserve didn't turn around and do something like QE3, we would have runaway deflation. It's just doing its normal operations. People are very worried about it. If they had done the opposite, we would have trouble.
By the way, in China, the China Credit Company, which is the company that sets up these trusts, one of which just failed.
A trust failed?
Yes.
That's failed trust.
You got it. And the reason people invested in this, by the way, we don't know who the investors are in this. This is kind of one of the reasons it's called shadow banking. A lot of it could be Americans. It could be, the market is a little bit concerned about this.
I think it's Peter Pan.
But what they did is they basically offered notes to people into corporations, and sometimes they were broken up and then sold someplace else, paying 5-8% per year. And the issue is, of course, that the company that they made the loan to has now defaulted on the loans. The Chinese government has stepped in with some money to keep it from collapsing. China Credit is now looking for more investors, and they said they've got interested parties that will buy up these loans in light of the fact that the Chinese government has stepped in and sort of rescued them. Now, why is this important to you? As you go about the business of investing, presuming that if you're listening to this show, you're an investor, you are going to find offerings at various times that are suggested to you where somebody will guarantee you an interest rate or promise an interest rate that is higher than the going market rate for bonds, which is minuscule right now. In other words, if somebody says, hey, I got this bond, I got this fund, I have this trust, I have this whatever, and it'll pay you 8% a year, or it'll pay you 5% a year. Now, I'm not talking about a diversified portfolio of something. I'm talking where you understand what's in there and you've got somebody who is legally responsible to you. I'm talking about somebody will offer you something that is, inevitably, they'll tell you it's guaranteed, it's safe, and pays an interest rate higher than you can get at the bank or you can get in a treasury security. When that happens, you are probably facing a significant risk of the loss of your money.
Let me throw in a movie quote. Be afraid.
Be very afraid. Yes. people bite on this so regularly. People jump on this so commonly.
There's this concept out there. It's almost a conspiracy theory that there's a secret to something. And if we know what the secret is, then we'll be as successful as those other people. And
yeah,
that's
some
even
kind
in
of
the advertisement
insider or something or another that
some way that they're getting ahead, they're getting over on us, and now I know about it. The reality is that it's not a secret. It's really boring. It is extremely boring. It is consistently with discipline putting money away in places where
other people don't want to put money
right.
away.
Right. And that is the secret, if there is one. It isn't this glamorous thing, and this is the thing that is the hardest on people. You can't really talk about what we do, mean variance optimization. You can't go to a cocktail party and someone saying, well, do you own Facebook? And say, well, I believe in mean variance optimization. It doesn't go over well at cocktail parties. It isn't sexy. It's boring. People don't know what it is. When you do explain it to them, they kind of go, well,
what are you doing at a cocktail party anyway?
What is that having to do with what I'm, you can't talk about this with the jet setter crowd, except that most of the jet setter crowd got there by doing this.
And there's a fundamental truth, and there's two sides to it. Bernie Madoff was able to get people to invest with him, and he has said this again and again, that the people who invested directly with him all knew something illicit was going on. They just didn't know that the illicit side of it was going to bite them.
Right. They thought they were getting over on somebody else.
Right. And that is just...
That's the truth in any con game,
believe
though.
Believe me, in the...
Any con game, you have to believe that you're getting over on someone else to be conned.
I can tell you that when we were in the brokerage business, where we sold securities... People would come into the office very regularly, wholesalers, and they would try to convince us that they had something that paid a lot of money, was risk-free, paid huge commissions.
We had the folks from Stanford come into the office and talk about these CDs, FDIC-insured CDs with huge commissions. Huge commission. Somebody,
and
you could get a
and very 7, high interest rate.
Right, you could get a 7% commission selling this CD, which that I mean, talk about red flag warnings at the very beginning. I'm going, wait a minute, this is an FDIC insured CD that's paying a high interest rate and paying a high commission.
Right,
where's the money coming from?
And we literally had a feeder fund. That was a feeder fund to a feeder fund that ultimately fed, we turned out later, to Madoff. And these people who came in, the salespeople, I'm confident.
We didn't have it, these people.
I mean, they came in to sell to us, and I'm confident they had no idea that what they were trying to sell was illicit and impossible, but they sure did make a serious effort to convince us that we ought to offer it to our customers. Now,
right.
We didn't. Because we did a little analysis on it, and it was a black hole, meaning it's a place where you put money, and they don't tell you what they're doing with the money. They're just making a lot of money with it, which sounds like a really good deal until you realize that if you look back a few years to when these things were really popular a few years ago, before particularly 2007 and earlier, you discover something. The ones that were the biggest... most successful, biggest money makers, biggest earners, somebody, generally speaking, is either now on trial or in prison for illegal activities.
This is the rule.
And this is the point. If you're the investor, you lost your money when that happened.
Yeah, this is the rule. This is the rule, and it's an easy one to follow. Don't invest in anything you don't understand. If you don't know why it's making money, you shouldn't invest in it. Even if you know why it's making money, think about why it's making money. Just look at it a minute and say, should it make money?
I can't tell you the number of people who've asked me about Bitcoins.
Right, exactly.
I said, the issue with Bitcoins, what do you think about Bitcoins? And let me tell you, I have retired people who are conservative investors who are asking me about Bitcoins, which means, by the way, Bitcoins are on the verge of collapse at this moment. I don't know if you realize this. The federal marshal's office seized
Oh, yeah.
A huge number of bitcoins. They haven't figured out what to do with them yet. And I don't remember the number.
I know why where they seized it.
Like 27 million?
It was 18 million.
Yeah, but it comes to 27 when you take the other part that they've seized
right.
that the guy is suing them over.
Right.
Who is also
it's
going to court
the
for
Silk
money
Road.
Laundering.
Yeah, the Silk Road guy.
Yeah, Silk Road.
Basically, what is a bitcoin? And let me. A bitcoin is an encryption key. That's all it is. It is an encryption code that computers can use to encrypt a conversation. There's a limited number of them found because it's like trying to find
prime numbers.
Yeah. It's more complex than that. But basically, it's finding prime numbers. And originally, it was really easy to do. It's not prime numbers. It is actually a more complex thing. It was very easy to do at the beginning because there's a lot of them that are easy to get to. Now we've got these big computers that are running full-time trying to get them. And it's a cryptocurrency. That's what it's called.
But here's the key. What is it backed by?
It's not backed by anything. In fact, if you use these, if you use a Bitcoin for its intended purpose, encrypting a conversation, it becomes worthless. Because now it's been used and someone else knows the key.
And this is the issue with Bitcoins. They are scarce. They are, meaning that there's a limited number of them.
It's like using chickens as currency.
Right. There are people who are marketing them very, very hard because they want to see the price go up because they want a lot of people to buy them.
Because they have a lot of them.
And they will then sell them. And once they sell them, the craze will go away because the price will start collapsing. Because it really boils down to something very, very simple. And this is, I can't emphasize this enough.
Emu eggs.
If what you're investing in produces utility, it makes somebody is making something or providing a service that improves the quality of life or the standard of living for real people, then it's producing utility. If it's producing utility for real people, then it has intrinsic value and may be worth investing in.
Yeah,
anything that you get into that doesn't produce utility, like gold, is
speculation.
Is going to be, first I considered, and I know you're going to think this is goofy, it's actually an immoral investment.
In order to make money, someone has to lose money.
I like what,
unless you found the gold, unless you created the Bitcoin.
Well, I like what Warren Buffett said about gold.
What's that?
Gold is a product that we pay people a lot of money to dig out of the ground.
Uh-huh. And then
purify, melt into bars, and then we put it back into the ground, and we pay other people a lot of money to guard it there. How can that be worth anything?
That is pretty true. And a Bitcoin is right there. I mean, if you think of the use, what is the utility of a Bitcoin? Well, it is cryptography. It is the ability to make a secure conversation or transaction. Is it worth $1,000 to do what secure websites already do for free?
Well, of course it is.
No,
I love those pictures. You know, the pictures of Bitcoins they have?
Yeah.
Aren't Bitcoins.
Those are not Bitcoins. Those are some kind of gold coin, something or another. A Bitcoin is a number. That's all it is. It is a number that, if it's ever printed, becomes worthless because that number is the value.
That nobody knows what the number is.
Good Morning America. One of the hosts gave another host a Bitcoin, it was a printout thing. It was like a gift card. And they opened it up, and the QR code on it was the Bitcoin. Okay? They opened it up in front of the camera, and someone paused a recording of Good Morning America, got the QR code off of it, and promptly used the Bitcoin. It became worthless. So, do you want to invest in Bitcoins? Probably not.
No.
And if you are into gambling, maybe. But we're not into gambling.
They're stored on your hard drive, and if your hard drive crashes,
there's a guy that
buy Bitcoin.
Yeah, there's a guy that had several hundred Bitcoins on his hard drive, and it was in a drawer in his house, and he threw it out. It's in a landfill now. It's somewhere around $1 million of Bitcoins that's in a landfill in a hard drive somewhere.
the reality of this situation is that cryptocurrency is never going to be a currency. It is like using chickens. They are, once you use the chicken in a bartering thing, first off, the chicken's going to get old.
Well, the thing is, chickens at least lay eggs, whereas bitcoins don't.
Right.
Do.
Bitcoins do not lay eggs. Right. Emus and ostriches also lay eggs. But again, it comes back to, if you've been in Texas for very long, you remember the ostrich craze. And people were offering...
It was an emu craze.
Yeah, you could... Emus and ostriches. You could... Oh. Their eggs were so healthy, and you could buy this egg for $400, and look at the omelet you could make with it. It's this huge omelet. I'm not going to eat a $400 omelet. It's not going to happen.
You're not Donald Trump.
I'm not Donald Trump. I am not.
I'll bet he has eaten a $400
Just
omelet.
Like I am not going to go to Amazon.com and buy a book using a cryptocurrency to make sure that my book purchase was safe.
And by the way, the primary use of Bitcoins to date has been contract killings, money laundering, and illegal drug transactions.
Right, because there is a marketplace designed to be, well, if
that's
you can't...
That's what Silk Road got nailed for.
Yeah, if you cannot publish the number of the cryptocurrency, and it has a value, then by definition it's secretive. So the trade in it, in money laundering, if you can trade bitcoins for actual value... Well, you just skipped the whole need to have money. So if you have a lot of drug money, and this is a big thing, it's now illegal in China to purchase bitcoins because many Chinese generals were taking money and buying bitcoins and then in the United States selling the bitcoins for dollars and suddenly having moved a bunch of currency, Chinese currency, into dollars, which the Chinese do not like. They do not want you to be able to sell their currency and transfer it to another currency.
Right.
They have many restrictions on that. Anyway, we've got more commercials to play.
We do. We have some commercials to play, and you are listening to The Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And if you'd like to call on the other side of commercials, the telephone number is in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we'll be back on the other side of these important words from Town Square's sponsors. And we're back with more of The Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Ooh, we did that so well.
Yes, I did want to say one of the benefits of going to our webpage and listening to our podcast is that if you have insomnia, we may cure it. We may put you right to sleep
right.
If you listen to the podcast. That's to see.
Particularly if you loop them so you listen
right.
to them over and over again.
And yeah. and I've been told that we are quite boring at times. So if you do have insomnia, just simply go to thepersonalwealthcoach.com
mm-hmm,
and listen
mm-hmm.
to our podcast.
Right, right.
It'll knock you right out.
And particularly if you listen to them from like a couple of years ago. And
right.
And all I do is just tell you what's happened.
Yeah. We're making predictions and it's... Yeah, well, anybody can do that.
And
it's
anyway,
like Shakespeare's, all he wrote were cliches. I mean,
right.
Why is he so important?
Well, I got some good news. I know that that's not going to probably improve our ratings any, but we're
yeah,
not
stop that.
Good.
Ratings are going down. You're giving good news. We need to panic people.
Household net worth is now significantly higher than it was before the recession.
Wait a minute. Let's see. How can we put a negative spin on that?
People have too much money?
Oh, yeah. People today have too much money.
Right. The household assets have risen very nicely. Now, this is an interesting thing that, and this comes from a guy named Timothy Taylor, and he has a blog called Conversable Economist, and he is, in fact, a legitimate professor, economist kind of thing, and I went and looked up his numbers. But it really, what it boils down to is... We got a recovery about mid-2013 in the total asset value held by households in the United States. And liabilities, which peaked around 2008, have
what were
declined.
What were they peaking at?
I don't know what they were peaking
I
at.
I used to peak at Christmas.
But The nice thing about it is when we look at the billions of dollars of household liabilities, it's sitting there around a little over $10 billion in the United States. Household assets, though, are sitting at about, this is...
That's got to be non-mortgage-based liabilities if it's only $10
billion. No, I'm sorry. $10
trillion. Yeah, I was going to say, this is, the number's a little weird.
Well,
here.
Actually, what we've got here are thousands of billions.
Thousands of billions, and you thought it was thousands of millions. It's a horrible, it's an understandable mistake.
I had to go up and look at the top, and it says billions, not millions. Okay, so what we have is about, right now, about $90,000 billion.
That's trillions.
So $90 trillion in household assets in the United States.
Yeah. That makes sense.
That's not owned by corporations. This is owned by households in the United States. At the same time, our debt held by those same households is about $10 trillion. So we have in the United States today roughly a 10-to-1 ratio between assets and liabilities.
Yeah.
Now, you don't hear that very often. You don't see that very often. Again,
it's important to know. I mean, most people's houses are not underwater. Most people's houses are a positive thing.
Well,
in fact,
unless there's a flood.
If there's a flood, they are underwater, yes. But if you have a house and it's worth $140,000 and you have debt on it of $80,000, then you've got more assets. Now, if you think about the number of people that have their houses completely paid off.
Now, this is... This comes from the January 2014 issue of Economic Trends from the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland. Now, this is not some lightweight blog post out here.
No, this is a Cleveland blog post.
Right.
It's not lightweight at all.
This is the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland was doing a national survey.
The Federal Reserve does a blog now?
No, but the Conversable Economist does.
Oh, okay.
And
so,
he got it from a publication. Which is online, of the Cleveland Federal Reserve Bank. So when you hear a lot of bad news about the country, there's some offsetting things just this week that I think are very, very important. That 90-10 ratio it's excellent. It's the best, frankly, the net worth of all American households in the United States today is significantly higher than it has ever been in history. The second thing that's really important to note there is that as soon as China reported its growth rate dropping into the 6%, 6.7, I think is what they claimed, although some economists say it's lower than that, GDP growth rate, as soon as that happened and people became suddenly a little bit afraid, we saw a mass movement of money from around the world
to U.S. Treasuries.
Just into the United States in what form or another. A lot of people who listen in this part of the country particularly believe that the United States is in trouble and the currency is about to collapse. And unfortunately or fortunately, depending on your belief system, that's not true.
Yeah.
We have the most stable currency, the most stable economy, the most stable households in the world, and we are better today than we have ever been at any point in history.
Now, let me tell you why that's not what you're hearing everywhere else. Because essentially, the human is a herd animal. And if you just take
I'm sorry, I couldn't help it.
If you think of a herd of antelopes standing in a field, they're kind of communicating to each other as they're doing it. We've got a couple of them that are out there looking for the leopards and the cheetahs out in the field. And the rest of them are communicating, yes, I'm eating grass, I'm eating grass, I'm eating grass. That's not giving a lot of attention. Look, I'm getting full over here. Other antelope don't look over at you and say, yep, you're eating grass. They just eat grass. What gets attention in a herd of antelopes, what gets all the heads to come up and all of the attention is a threat. And the news media's job is to get your attention. They're not going to get your attention by saying, yep, we're eating grass over here, we're eating grass over here. They're going to get your attention by saying, lions exist! oh, do you know that the number of cheetahs today exists? And it doesn't matter. Just fill in the headline with whatever the humans are afraid of. And humans are afraid of market downturns. We had a stellar year in the market in 2013. Anybody that was involved in the market is pretty well sure that, yes, that was an amazing year. The Dow was up about 30%. We didn't have headlines that say Dow up 30%. But Friday, when the market dropped, all I see this weekend is I see crash. I see these headlines that are up there. And it's, again, it's the antelope scenario. What's scary? How do we get your attention? How do we get you to focus on it? And I'm not saying that it's false scares. There are things that we need to be aware of. But you also need to be aware that the methodology of getting that news to you is going to be hyperbolic. How do you like that? There will be hyperbole used. It will be dramatic. And
that
it will
means
be
a really big ball, right?
Yes, a very fast ball. Okay. It's a very fast ball. It's like a speed ball in baseball.
It
is going very fast. If you recognize that hyperbolic means to spin very fast. It means that there's spin involved. Headlines, by definition, are intended to get your attention. Attention is gotten by scaring you. If you recognize that as you're reading, then you can actually respond the way you're supposed to and not run from shadow cheetahs.
We got a caller, and we'll go to the caller in just a second, but I did want to make one other observation. And I made this in the letter on several occasions. We are in many ways in the early 1980s. The price-to-earnings ratio of the market, the forward price-to-earnings ratio, and this thing that came out from the Cleveland Fed, the financial obligation ratio in American households, which expresses household liabilities, credit card payments, mortgage payments, home property taxes, rent payments as a percentage of disposable income, is at its lowest level since 1981.
What that means is it costs less just to live than it has since 1981.
And the end result is that was the beginning of the bull market that ran from about 1982 to 2000. And I really think we are right on the verge of about a 15-year major secular bull market.
Look at
We've begun it.
All of the trends and such, we look very much like we are, like we did at the beginning of the 1980s.
We have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, you're assuming, first of all, about these the new media. You're assuming that all of them
new media
don't really believe what they're
No, we don't make that assumption at all.
No, they can believe it. They can believe it and simply misreport it.
Or they can have a hidden agenda. Doesn't matter.
Granted. Okay, now I do have a problem with your wording about humans being herd animals. I think we're a gregarious creature. But I don't want to get into philosophy and evolution and stuff like that, but I don't believe we're animals. We walk on two legs, we write books, we've built civilizations. I mean,
Either have to be animal, vegetable, or mineral. Yeah, which are we?
Animal just means animus, which is to move.
Well,
which means we're not growing from the ground.
Do you think we're vegetables?
I don't want to get into the argument. I just think.
But what are we then? If we're not animals,
a creature would be a better way to put it.
Okay, a creature implies creation, so that is getting into philosophy.
Okay, all I want to say is, if we're not animals, are we vegetables or minerals?
No, we're human beings. There's animals, there's plants, there's insects. There's
so
birds,
if we cut us...
And then there's humans.
So if you cut yourself and you bleed, it looks an awful lot like any other animal, right?
That's the flesh of animals is different than the flesh of humans. And
I think you are giving us some nice religious philosophy, but it's yours and you're welcome to it.
Yeah, and the reality is that...
know that the flesh of humans is different than the flesh of animals.
It is. Well, the flesh of...
The flesh of a dog is different from the flesh of a monkey, too, but that doesn't make one of them not an animal.
Have you ever seen anything change in the... I mean, has mankind ever seen anything change in the thousands of years we've recorded history?
Yes.
We've discovered new species. That's about it. We discovered new species.
What do you mean? Anything change? What are you talking about?
Thousands. I mean, there's so much has changed.
What?
I mean, I'm talking about animals.
Yes.
Animals
dogs,
changing?
Absolutely.
Dogs, frogs,
absolutely.
Frogs.
Yeah. You know, I mean, we've seen it in. It's easy to watch in fruit flies.
Yeah, but what? I mean, there have been new species appear.
Okay, when the Industrial Revolution came along, the trees got darkened in Europe, and a certain kind of moth, which was dark-colored, survived where the light-colored ones were easily spotted by the birds.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Where are we coming from here?
That's not evolution. That's not a...
Wait a minute. You began by saying you didn't want to debate philosophy.
Or evolution.
Now you're debating philosophy and evolution. You started by saying we were assuming... Can you turn him down, please? Okay. Not me.
Yeah, anyway,
you started by saying you didn't want to debate philosophy, but you really want to debate philosophy. You also started by saying that we're assuming that they believe what they print when we didn't ever assume that. You've got a lot of preconceived notions, and I think we appreciate the call, but it's completely off topic.
Thank you very much for calling, and this is the Versatile Wealth Coach.
Yes.
We try to base what we do on fact, and that's as far as we want to go with it.
Whether or not we were created is not the question that we're coming here. The fact that we're based on the same chemicals as other animals and that we're motivated by fear and greed, just like a dog or a cat, is not debatable. It simply is. Where we come from is debatable. That's not what we're trying to do here. What we're debating or what we're stating is that our reactions as a group, as a crowd, tends to be the same as the group and crowd reactions of other animals that are herd animals.
Right.
If you think of a group of monkeys or a large group of cattle, what gets their attention? Fear gets their attention a lot faster than greed, but greed will do it. If you get a bunch of cattle that know it's feeding time, they're going to head to the trough even if it's not full.
Yeah, the issue in whether or not the word animal is used is that human beings behave with what is commonly referred to in psychology as a herd mentality. We tend to do things because the people around us are doing things. We tend to get emotional in the way that the people around us are getting emotional without any logical cognitive thought associated with it.
You know, Pavlov was sitting in a bar, and they were closing up. They were doing last call for alcohol, and they rang the bell, and he goes, "Oh, I forgot to feed the dogs."
I think that there's a very small number of our listeners who will get that. But you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. Telephone numbers in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And like I said, we had some, that was some good news. I'll also tell you something else. We've been quite a while, we mentioned this earlier, without a correction in the markets.
Yeah.
And
we've been talking about needing one, for any other reason than psychology.
Let's presume, just for the sake of argument, let's presume, and there's a couple of ways of looking at this.
I would rather assume
1982 was the equivalent of 2009.
Okay.
And that we are recovering, just as we were recovering from 1982. There's a lot of similarities, by the way.
Very, very similar.
And that means it's about 1987, 5 years later.
Which is when we had a market crash.
And to this day, despite the fact it's been a really long time since 1987, and
Nobody knows why it happened.
A lot of people have spent a lot of time trying to understand why the stock market rose dramatically in 1987, and then about 30%, which is what we saw last year, and then suddenly fell 30%
and then recovered
in about
a
week. And that was called a panic. And I can tell you that there is a pretty reasonable probability, I would say a 50-50 chance at this point, that sometime in the next year or two, we will have a stock market collapse for no particular reason. Now, when those occur, and I didn't say if it occurs, when it occurs, if you're an investor, this is crucial, it means nothing. Just simply accept the fact that it happened and recognize that it's going to recover quite immediately because there was no underlying reason other than one thing, and that is what we used to call chaos. It's now called complexity theory. I've actually got a way of demonstrating it to people. I can show it to you on a computer screen, natively, based in the computer, based in the world. There is this random event cycle that it's not even a cycle that goes on, and we have market run-ups and sudden collapses for no reason whatsoever. As long as you don't get a confirming signal from the underlying economy, it's absolutely nothing to be concerned about.
Yeah, and we have conflicting signals. What makes the market profitable is the companies in the market being profitable, and that's what's happening right now. They are profitable, which means when you look at the earnings, you look at the prices, we're still talking fair value. If we have a drop right now, we're going to have a drop at some point.
And it could be now. It could be in 5 years.
Just keep looking at the numbers and saying, all right, is what I'm doing reasonable? Are the companies that I'm investing in profitable? Are the prices that I'm purchasing fair for the profit that's being given?
Unfortunately, that's a hard thing to know.
That is a hard thing to know, but it is something that... It's a regular pastime, and it's a disciplined approach. It is something that has to be done repeatedly.
If history repeats itself, there's two ways of looking at this, by the way. One is that the Dow Jones Industrial Average finally broke through its previous record.
Of 1,000
in 1983, and then about in 1982. So then about 5 years later, we had the 1987 market crash. This is pretty consistent, this five-year period. Another way of looking at it is coming from a market bottom. But here's the point I wanted to make. Last year, the Dow Jones Industrial Average broke through the level that it reached in the year 2000.
If you imply inflation, yeah.
Probably in the near future, there will be some degree of market mania set in.
Right.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average and the S&P 500 will run up a little bit unreasonably. People's fear will take over. There will be a serious correction in the market. And it may be called a bear market. Anything over 20 is called a bear. But it really will be just a correction unless there's some fundamental economic change that we don't even know about now. Ignore that one. The problem in the long term, as we're running out of time here, I wanted to say this, is that once we get through that short blip, the equivalent of the 1987 30% market crash, and we come out of it with absolutely no real long-lasting damage, we will reach a conclusion, and that is we're immune.
And then we will have a real problem later.
Yes.
Which is what happened in
94. And that's what we work with day in, day
yeah.
out.
I wanted to say this. In 94, I still have the newspaper, the Dow crossed 3,000.
Right.
3,000.
Three, and that was ridiculously high.
It's now dropped back below 16,000 to 15,000 something or another. Think about the time that we're talking about here. We're talking about 20 years to go from 3,000 to 16,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's about five times what it was.
And we don't even have to adjust that for inflation because the dividends will make up for inflation.
Right. And people today, they talk about, you know, my house seems to be doing fairly well. People in Austin. I bought a house in 2006, and I bought it for $85,000, and I sold it this year for $140,000. And I was like, well, that's very nice. That's just over a 10% rate of return. And that's in a booming real estate market is 10%.
Right. And they didn't take into account that they had to pay along the way to own that house.
Right.
So they needed to subtract whatever they paid.
Well,
in
that's
terms
part of
taxes.
The mortgage and
no, I'm talking about
taxes.
Taxes,
property taxes
and insurance.
Correct.
Subtract that from your gains and you may suddenly realize that the gains weren't that alike.
They also would have had to pay rent if they were staying somewhere.
Right.
So, it's a wash. The cost of staying in a place washes out. So, anyway, we're out of time. Thanks for listening. If you haven't listened, then we're not thanking you, but you can't hear us anyway.
I'm going to think about that for a while.
Yes. If you're not listening, then we are not listening to you either.
This is the Personal Wealth Coach, and if you'd like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail during the weekends. Of course, during the week, we have live human beings answering the phone. I know that's odd.
No monkeys involved.
And the telephone number locally would be 947-1111. Or
you can also reach it toll-free. It's the same voicemail, 1-800-914-7526. It's 800-914-PLAN.
Or you can contact us by email at jeff@tpwc.com or
jake@tpwc.com. Or you can go to our webpage and listen to podcasts. And as we said before, it may be a cure for insomnia. You can
do
go
not
to
listen
the
to them while driving down the highway.
It may cause drooling, anxiety, and other objects of badness. Anyway, the webpage is www.thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. You can also see our made-for-radio faces on that webpage.
You can?
Yes. You,
right,
you can look
good
at us.
Nice
and
to know that.
I warned
well,
you.
This has been the Personal Wealth Coach. Until next week, we'll still be there and hope you'll be there.
News Radio 1400 KTEM. Serving Central Texas. KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.